Ultimately, grazing lands contain 50% more carbon than the world's forests and must be protected if we want to stifle climate change.
This is the Our Inheritance podcast, where we focus on stories about climate solutions. We explore different pathways to a future where we not only put less carbon into our atmosphere, but where we actually begin to draw down that amount to a level that is sustainable for all life on Earth. I'm Wyatt Dayhoff, and in this episode, we'll explore managed grazing as a climate change solution.
For much of our existence, humanity has relied on domesticated animals to survive. In fact, the first sheep were domesticated over 9,000 years ago in the Middle East. Since then, reliance on these animals has skyrocketed, as globally, farmers raise almost 75 billion livestock animals and use over 3 billion hectares of land for pasture. To put that into perspective, that is almost as much as the landmass of the US and Russia combined. While these animals are undoubtedly crucial for our survival, their development has come at a cost. During homesteading in the United States, rangelands in the West were brutally overgrazed because of government policies meant to promote settlement. The Great Plains were depleted and bison were slaughtered, leaving the soil to become weak and prone to erosion. This problem is not isolated to the U.S. In fact, a 2002 synthesis from Richard T. Conant and Keith Paustian found that 7.7% of the world's grasslands are classified as overgrazed. This is detrimental because as lands become overgrazed, productivity can drop by up to 50%, harming the ability for us to sustain ourselves. When this happens, even more land must be used, only exacerbating the negative trend. Indeed, if we don't improve practices, a 2019 study conducted by the World Resources Institute found that by 2050, we will need 2.5 billion more hectares of land, which would release the entire global budget for all greenhouse gas emissions by 2050 if we want to stay below 2 degrees Celsius of warming. Luckily, there's a solution: managed grazing. According to Drawdown, managed grazing involves carefully controlling livestock density and timing and intensity of grazing. While there are many forms of managed grazing, the most prominent and publicized tends to be rotational grazing. Traditionally, cattle will continuously graze one stretch of pasture, not moving much. However, in rotational grazing, cattle are rotated through multiple paddocks of pasture land anywhere from once a week to multiple times every day. By doing this, the cattle are healthier, the soil is given time to recover, and forage for the animals increases. While some have technicalized the system by using electric moving gates, at its root, rotational grazing is extremely simple. To explain how rotational grazing has impacted her farm, I'd like to welcome Mary Jo Forward, a certified dietitian and former president of Prairie Horizon Farm, LLC, right here in Minnesota that practices rotational grazing. She says,
so the cattle are used to being moved every day. So every time they hear the four-wheeler, they're like mooing and moving and like, okay, it's dinner, you know, new paddock. And so he comes and he loosens the fence and the cattle run through and it takes like 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. And then he unhooks the portable water from where they've been, rehooks the fence, even though they don't want to go back.
Even without an analytical system, Dr. Forward was able to transform how she conducted her farming, which she says has been extremely important in reestablishing her connection with the land and adapting to the increasingly unfriendly conditions for small farmers.
Now, we see differently. We see through different eyes. We see how our animals are healthier and I'd say happier outside, eating fresh grass every day. They are on really diverse prairie that has deep roots, two times as deep as the tall grass that you see on top of the soil. So the resilience of nature, I would say, is really presenting itself before our eyes, and it's up to us to try to see it.
Thank you. Another form that managed grazing can take is called mob grazing, which is meant to simulate the movement of large ruminants pre-humanity, those of the bison in the Great Plains and the wildebeest in Africa. Innovators such as Alan Savory, creator of holistic management, have used this to rehabilitate land that was depleted across entire continents. I strongly urge all of you to check out his TED Talk titled How to Fight Desertification and Reverse Climate Change whenever you can, as it is extremely informative and gets into more of the analytical bits that we won't cover in this podcast. Crucially, though, managed grazing is such a unique and good solution because there isn't just one definition of what works for everybody. According to Jason Sawyer, a faculty member with the King Ranch Institute at Texas A&M University who has been involved with sustainable beef production for his entire career.
There's kind of two sides to every coin, right? So managed grazing, in the sense of adaptive multi-paddock systems that follow a very specific sort of a protocol, things that are that prescriptive, you know, often are very situational. But when we talk about managed grazing, there are many different grazing strategies that might yield those same benefits. In order to achieve the soil health benefits attributed to managed grazing, does everybody have to do it the same way? And the answer to that would be no.
Managing one's grazing is an individual process that must be tailored to each farmer's needs, and it can vary from massive electric paddocks to simply increasing the size of the herd. Clearly, there's a concerted effort to make our practices better, not just to help ourselves, but to help our planet. So, how does managed grazing help the climate? Believe it or not, these seemingly minute and simple changes can, in fact, have significant effects. Dr. Sawyer contextualizes.
Anything that increases the efficiency of production has positive impacts on metrics that we typically associate with sustainability. So if I can improve production efficiency, then I generally reduce environmental impact when we achieve those greater efficiencies and lower costs, and we allow operators to improve their economic viability, then their incentive to become better stewards of the resources that they have to work with actually becomes higher, and they're more capable of making investments for the long term. And so we have kind of a virtuous cycle there.
Managed grazing specifically increases efficiency in a few ways. First, managed grazing can help counteract the negative effects of agriculture. When overgrazing occurs, the land begins to desertify and the soil begins to decay because it simply can't sustain itself when it is continuously pounded and sheared down. As a result, productivity tanks 50%, as previously stated. When better practices are implemented and animals can roam from paddock to paddock without constantly disturbing the soil, the soil is given a chance to recover. Mob grazing, too, causes more organic matter to be crushed, covering the soil. This matters because if you don't cover soil, it will be colder at night and hotter in the day, which on a large scale can alter the macroclimate and make the soil much more vulnerable to extreme weather. Second, Dr. Forbord says,
this is the big one. You stop having inputs come down the driveway. The feed, the fertilizer, the pesticides. You turn off the inputs, and when you do that, you start seeing how you've been interrupting a cycle, how you've been detrimental in your management.
When we can remove these harmful inputs, costs decrease, productivity increases, and the soil is massively benefited. Not only that, but better grazing practices can help with what many see as the fatal flaw of cattle. Methane. When they are moving around more and consuming more diverse forage, cattle are found to decrease methane production by 9%, a sizable amount considering methane from ruminants accounts for 38% of agricultural emissions on net. So if there's one thing you take away from this podcast, is that you shouldn't blame the cows, blame the grazing. Overall, a synthesis of 64 separate studies found that rotational grazing has been found to increase the stored soil carbon by 10%. This is extremely important because if soil can hold more carbon, we can effectively sequester carbon from the air. Due to all these factors, rotational grazing both sequesters carbon and benefits the animals, achieving the often difficult objective of being sustainable and productive simultaneously. It really is a win-win. Granted, not everything is as rosy as I've put it out to be. Governments across the world, especially the US government, still subsidize old, broken practices that destroy the soil and harm the animals' well-being. On a local level, Dr. Forbord says that
we've stopped being able to recognize the difference between life and death.
As such, many farmers are very much stuck in their ways. They either don't understand the premise of managed grazing or choose to reject it because it seems complicated. Not only that, but Dr. Forbord adds,
farmers in the early 1990s weren't given a lot of choice. And now we have, you know, all of those years where farmers only know how to grow two things. That's where their incentives are. That's where the insurance is. Everything was a barrier, and unfortunately, kind of still is.
Globally, the issue is much the same, hence the projection that our land needs will increase while our productivity gains do not keep pace. Yet, through all of this, progress continues. Just as all other facets of human life move forward, so too has grazing, and at the recent Glasgow Conference on Climate Change, improving animal health and agriculture practices were recognized as an issue that countries must work together on. There is still hope. It's just a matter of educating and informing the population so that we can move forward. Ultimately, Drawdown places managed grazing at the number 11 best solution with the ability to sequester over 16 gigatons of carbon dioxide by 2050. Not only can it help on a large global scale, but individual farmers are benefited as well with happier, healthier animals and stronger, more sustainable soil. Unlike many proposed solutions, too, this solution doesn't require new technology. All it takes is effort. If we want to truly transform the practice of grazing, we must focus on creating government incentive structures and fostering better education. We must reconnect with our roots and refocus on our land. When we do this, Drawdown will not be far away. I'd like to thank the Blake School Environmental Science Program and Research Support Staff for helping source, cite, and fact-check this podcast. I'd also like to thank Britt Ganginis at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, Mary Oldham Hanneman from the University of Minnesota Institute on the Environment, and Blake parent Joseph Barasanzi for their interview support. I'd like to thank Mary Jo Forbord and Jason Sawyer for taking the time to talk to me about climate change solutions. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate, and leave a review, and check out the other podcasts in our series. Thank you.